All right, so you can turn to 2 Samuel chapter 2 and just stay there for a minute. What we were talking about was, you remember last week, we talked about David, and we left off where he was prospering very well because he was obeying the Lord. He was in his place, and God was blessing him and through him Israel. Everybody was prospering. He was defeating all of the Amalekites, the Malachites, the Canaanites, all these people around him, but especially we noted that he was really trampling the Philistines. We saw one of the first instances that he had a battle with the Philistines after being king, and we saw one of the major things he did, actually the major thing he did first was what? Inquire of the Lord, right? We're going to see him do that again. But we were at the point, and I want to finish this topic today because I hope you see its importance if you were here last week, where he defeats the Philistines. And then they abandoned their idols. Remember we talked about that last week? They abandoned their idols, and then he took them captive. We talked about the importance of that, because that is really what it's all about, isn't it? Above and beyond what our major job is to what? Spread the gospel. Otherwise, there's no need for us to be here. But we also talked about the other piece, is that the gates of hell, or Hades, shall not prevail against the church. I want to make this clear. This is very important to understand. And that's why we're covering it. Because if we don't understand the twofold purpose that we are here for, we may be defeated in our full work. Or we may be discouraged, or we may walk around fearful. And let's face it, there's plenty to be fearful of today, isn't there? And it's not going to get any better. It's going to get worse, and a lot more soon. All right? So we're not just here to spread the gospel. We are here to also defeat Satan and his demons and his, have authority over them, let's put it that way, in Jesus. We are to defeat them. You are and I are to go about, not just worrying about being attacked all the time. We must be on the offensive. Does that make sense? If we are just worried about being attacked, we're already under pressure, aren't we? But so that's why Jesus says, you know, in one instance, we look at Scripture and it says, put on the whole armor of God. So that is also a defensive posture, isn't it? But we also see that the gates of hell shall not prevail against us. So where's the difference here? If on the one hand we have to be covered with the whole armor of God, armor does defend you, right? You can bang somebody over the head with a shield, but basically it's not a weapon. And then hell has gates to prevent us from entering. So what's the difference? It's the sword. Who has the sword? In these two factions with these defensive postures, who has the sword? It's us. And what is the sword? That's right. And that's why we need to understand that this word is equipping us to not only have the full armor of God, but we need this word. We need it in our hearts. We need it in our minds. We need to understand the detail, because that is the only thing that is going to hand you the sword that complements the armor that you already have. And you and I are not going to defeat the gates of hell. You're not going to enter that with just your armor. You need a sword. Now, they have a sword as well. What's their major sword? It's fear. It's fear. Fear. For us, it's fear. For the world, they're condemned. Their sword will chop their heads off. Can the sword of the enemy kill you? No. Can it kill me? No. So I'm asking the question, what do you and I have to be fearful of? You see, I'm very strong about this because I have told you, I've shared with you, I have lived a point in my life when I was absolutely fearful to the point of thinking that I was going to die. I was going to hell. I told you that. And the reason why I told you that is because I understand that God allowed that. He had that plan for me because it made me the man I am today. So if you're going through trials and you're going through issues, first of all, we know in Scripture it says what? Don't be surprised. There's nothing that affects you or I that has not affected everybody, every other human being on this planet. Sometimes you'll actually get a worse dose of the things that we might think are bad because it's in God's plan for you, like it was in his plan for me. So we have to understand this, and that's why we're talking about this. We talked about Jesus here. Where we left off last time is that he said the gates of Hades shall not prevail. Hopefully I showed you last week and you now understand that the eternal hell of damnation, is it populated yet? No. I hope you understand that, because one of the major problems in understanding is that people think right now, and I understood because I thought it was that way too, that, hey, if you die without Christ, you go to hell. Well, that's true. But there are some things that have to happen first. We talked about that last week. And also, again, I want to stress that when hell is finally populated, when is that time when it's finally populated? After everything's done, right? After the tribulation, after the thousand-year millennium, right, the kingdom. And just before the time comes when the new Jerusalem comes down and everything is renewed, and all of this is history. Not so fond of history, not so fond of memory, right? But Satan is gone, the Antichrist is gone, all of those who rejected Christ are gone and locked away in hell. Are there going to be any gates that have to prevail against the church? Why? Because it's permanent, it's done. There's no door, there are no gates when hell is finally populated and closed. And there's no need for the church either, is there? Because we'll all be with God in eternity. We have to then understand what this place is that Jesus is talking about. We talked about the rich man and Lazarus, right? And in this place called Hades, there are two places. Paradise, remember I told you very briefly, paradise came down from heaven. It went to earth. Adam and Eve were put there. What happened when they sinned? They were thrust out. The Garden of Eden was still there, and what prevented them from coming back? Because, you know, if you and I are Adam and Eve, we're going to want to go back there. What prevented them from going back in there? Cherubim. It was cherubim. By the way, we're going to talk about cherubim. There's a special class of angels called cherubim. By the way, Satan was one of them. Okay. But anyway, there were cherubim that had swords turning every which way. It's not a metaphor. They had something there that Adam and Eve knew that if they tried to pass by, they would be physically killed, so they weren't going to do that. Then what happened to paradise after that? It went underground, is basically what it did. In this interdimensional way, which we don't understand, but it's very well proved in Scripture, and by the way, it's in my notes if you care to read, toward the beginning in Genesis about Hades and this place called paradise, which we now call Abraham's bosom in the Old Testament. And those who are going to be destined for the final judgment and go to be turned into hell are in Hades now. Do we agree? They're not in hell. They're in Hades. They have to go to be judged. And there was this chasm that they could look over and see those who were destined before Jesus came to go to heaven. They believed in the promise of Messiah, and they were in this place called Abraham's bosom. We understand that. We also now understand that, and Rachel and I were talking about that this week. She named the scripture because I couldn't think of it. But where Jesus, after he dies, he goes down and he announces his victory. Who did he announce his victory to? He didn't announce it to anybody on the cross, did he? He only said, "It is finished," on the cross, did he? Right? He didn't have a megaphone saying, "Hey, it's done, I've won." He did it the first time after he died because he ran the course. The first place he went was to go down to where Hades and Abraham's bosom were. And he went down to Abraham's bosom and he took those. He announced his victory. The ones that were in Hades could see him come. And he announced his victory to them. Does that make sense? Why is it called Hades? That's what we're going to talk about today. There was a great chasm. Remember I said to you last week that all the gods of mythology, are they real? How many gods in reality are there?
One.
Right. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But in this fallen universe, in this fallen world, who is the king or the god of this world now? With a little g. So he can pretty much do whatever he wants within the confines of what God allows him to do. And let's face it, he's got pretty wide latitude. Would you agree? Okay. So while he's got that wide latitude, what is the major attribute of Satan? He is a
deceiver,
liar. And so what do you think he's going to do? He has this lust, this bloodlust, because it is blood sacrifice. And they do that these days too. We talked about cattle mutilations where there is no blood in those carcasses at all, not one drop. They can't understand it. They remove the heart without even opening the pericardium. Did you know that? Modern surgery cannot do the things that are done to these carcasses when they find them. But of course, the media doesn't tell you these things. It's been going on for over 50 years that we know about. There's more to it than that. It's all related to being worshipped, blood sacrifice. You know those Baal and all of these others that they sacrifice to? What do you think abortion's all about? It's about many things, but one of the things is sacrifice. We're sacrificing millions of unborn babies on the altar of humanism, which is manned by or headed by these gods that I'm telling you about. So let's go back to these gods. There were a base set of main gods. Okay, you've heard of Osiris, Isis, and they started in Egyptian mythology, and they moved their way to Greek mythology, and finally Roman mythology, and then of course you have the other mythologies, the other religions, which base some of their things on this foundation of lies and deception. And who's going to be the head, the capstone of this pyramid at the end of the days? The Antichrist. He's going to be the God that is going to show all of these gods that he is God, and all of those who do not believe in the true God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Jesus Christ as God, well, they're believing something else as their God, because there's no human being who does not have a God. There is none. Even the Antichrist will have a God. His God will be Satan himself. So having said all of that, let's talk about Hades. Why Jesus specifically mentioned the gates of Hades. He didn't say the gates of Isis or the gates of Osiris, but make no mistake about it, he was talking about mythology. Even Jesus talked about mythology. Isn't that interesting? Would we know that as Christians if you didn't learn it here or if you didn't see it in the Bible? Because it's important to understand as a basis. The better you know this, the better you understand Scripture is what I'm saying. Even Jesus made references to it. So who is Hades? Well, last week I mentioned that Hades is the king of the dead. Isn't that great? Wouldn't you like to serve a God who's the king of the dead? Our God is the king of the... Matter of fact, he said that we were going to have life and life more abundantly. Interesting. So we have on the one side Jesus and the anti-Jesus, or the Antichrist, at the end of the age. But during this time, we have this God of the dead and the God of the living. You see this parallel course? It's a chess game. Whoever usurps the king at the end becomes the ruler of the universe, right? That's the game. It's the game. And that's what this whole scripture chronicles. It's the game. And God's allowing it to be played because he could stop it at any time. He could have stopped it before it started. So Hades is the king of the dead, also known as the lord of the underworld. Well, guess who's going to rule hell when it's finally populated? Matter of fact, it says in the book of Isaiah that the swelling population of hell is rising to meet you. Very poetic. We're going to read that when we get to Isaiah. It rises to meet you in anticipation of your coming. Did you know that it says that? There is such anticipation for the king of hell to reside in hell. Believe me, there's a lot to hell that we're never even going to know, because they're going to be there for eternity, and they will have their king, and they will have decided to be there with their king. And their king will rule. You ever hear that statement that you hear some ignorant people say? Well, you know what? All this Jesus stuff, I'd rather rule in hell than serve in heaven. Anybody ever hear that? Mm-hmm. I've heard it. Probably seen it on a bumper sticker, too. I don't know. All right. So, Hades. Here's the basic myth of Hades. It's one of these base gods, but he's actually not the very base one. We're going to talk about this one, named Zeus. So I want you to just listen and understand, and as we're learning this, I want you to map it into what you already know about Scripture, about our God and our Jesus, about Satan and what he does. And mapping in what you already know about how history is unscrolling itself here in Scripture for you, what is being done here. Remember, it's a chess game, right? So we're on, I guess you'd say, the black side of the board. Hades. The basic myth is this. Hades springs out of the earth and captures Persephone. This is a woman goddess. And dragging her off to be his queen in the underworld. Her mother Demeter searches for her and stops all food from growing growing on the earth. So this Demeter, now see, I can't get into all of these personalities, but just know what they're doing here, okay? Because these are people, you have lords over the crops, you know, like, you know how in mythology you've heard, even today in China and other places, they'll pray to the god of this or that. And even, I hate to say it, but the Catholic Church does it too. They pray to their saints, don't they? There's a saint for lost things, and there's a saint for found things. There's a saint for pains in the back and pains in the neck. I pray to the one who has a pain in the neck, but he hasn't done anything for me yet. I still got plenty of pains in the neck. Teasing. But you know what I'm talking about, right? So, and I'm not here to bash the Catholic Church, but I got to tell you the truth. How many times have I had to say that when I've said what the Pope says, that they believe in aliens, that in no way, shape, or form does aliens diminish God. As a matter of fact, they say now, from the chief astronomer in the Catholic Church, under the Pope, who the Pope appointed when he came in, says that if we do not believe in aliens from other places in this universe, that we are limiting God's creative capability. Isn't that interesting? I read you the articles if you were here. It's all well known. It's well published. The Catholic Church has no problems publishing the stuff because they are getting a people ready for what's coming. Because there are plenty of Catholics who are Christian, but not all Catholics are Christian. And the Pope, I don't believe, is Christian. And if you look at who a Pope is, it's in my notes, by the way. Look at the history. Anyway, I digress. So let's talk about worshiping idols. Her mother, Demeter, searches for her and stops all food from growing until Persephone, or Persephone, whatever, however you want to pronounce it. I'm bad with these names.
Persephone.
Persephone? Thank you. Maybe you can help me with the Hebrew names, too, because I'm... That's why I never went to college. They didn't accept me because I couldn't talk right. All right, so it's Persephone. Thank you. Persephone. Wow, I should start spelling these out phonetically in my notes. Persephone is Demeter?
Yep.
Okay, good. Persephone is returned. Finally, a deal is worked out where Persephone stays one-third of the year with Hades, one-third of the... It's like custody. One-third of the year with Hades, one-third of the year serving as a handmaiden to Zeus at his headquarters in Mount Olympus, and one-third with her mother. Okay? Here's an interesting fact, though. Hades originally may have been one of the dark and underworld aspects of Zeus, which I believe, looking at this for the last few years now, remember, Zeus is going to be one of these base gods. I'm going to talk about him in a second. Hades originally may have been one of the dark underworld aspects of Zeus, eventually considered to be a separate deity. So he may, when we talk about Hades, we're really talking about Zeus, the primary Egyptian god of the underworld. Okay, so I want you to equate the two of them. Because guess who Jesus talks about? Zeus. He not only mentions Hades in Scripture, but he also mentions Zeus. And guess what? I'm going to show you where that is. Just hang in there. All right. He is sometimes also called Zeus the Departed. His name originally probably meant invisible or unseen. Now, when you go to Hades, it's the place of the dead. We know that for a fact in Scripture. But mythology is right about it, isn't it? But they embellish it because it is a place that is populated now. And there is a lord of Hades, who, by the way, the same lord of Hades, basically, even though he doesn't have full control over it yet, he will have full control over when Hades is depopulated, and all those people are transferred to their permanent place, which is the real hell, which you could say is Hades, but it's not. You see what I'm saying? It's equivalent. So who is Zeus? In Greek mythology, Zeus is the father of the gods and men. That's what they called him. So would you say he's the primary god, like of everything? So who's the real god and father of all created beings? Our God, right? So you see the equation here? Do you think that people made this up? They didn't. This was all given to them over the centuries, over the eons, by demons and by fallen angels who appeared and said, I'm a god and follow me, and they did things for him. You know, these things manifested as real. So guess what the deception is coming, the great deception that's coming. When the Antichrist comes and calls fire down from heaven, don't you think he'll be worshipped as a god? And people will think they have good reason because they're actually seeing him do stuff, and maybe for their benefit. Doesn't Satan do things for people's benefit too? Mm-hmm. Ever hear the Faustian bargain? Anybody ever hear of that? Yeah. You know what the Faustian bargain is? You can have whatever you want, but it'll only cost you your soul. That's what it is. Many people have done that. You look at rock and roll, the legends of rock and roll, like Ozzy Osbourne, like Mick Jagger, whose sympathy for the devil. Remember he says, my name is Lucifer, I was around when Christ suffered. You ever hear the lyrics of those words, of those songs? Who do you think is influencing these men? You think they're just making this up? Look at Marilyn Manson, if you've ever heard of this guy, or Lady Gaga. You know, we laugh because it's foolishness. But these people, I personally believe, my opinion, if you look at the lives they've lived, they've sold their souls. They wanted fame, they wanted fortune, they wanted everything that human beings want. It only costs you your soul. And then they become slaves. And they become the major proponents for Satan, don't they? And we lose generation after generation to them. All right. So, Zeus is the father of gods and men who ruled the Olympians of Mount Olympus. as a father ruled the family. He was the god of sky and thunder in Greek mythology. So now he's not only the god of earth, but he's also the god of the heavens. See? His Roman counterpart was Jupiter. And by the way, Jupiter actually transfers. If you remember what we talked about, where we talked about the constellations and how they show the salvation, Jupiter really translates into the planetary type or the astronomy type of Jesus. And Saturn is really, you've heard of Saturnalia and all that stuff. Called Saturn, the god Saturn, or not the god, the planet Saturn actually translates into Satan. And so in the constellations, if you look at how the 12 rotate, it goes from Virgo, which is the beginning, the Virgin, right, all the way to the end, right, where there's salvation. And in the middle of the battle between Satan and Jesus, and you look at how these planets move through the constellations, you'll see how it goes. So it's very interesting. Zeus played a dominant role presiding over the Greek Olympian pantheon. He fathered, now listen to this, he was the father of many heroes. Interesting. Many heroes, and was featured in many of their local cults. He was also the supreme cultural artifact. In some senses, he was the embodiment of Greek religious beliefs. Would you say that he was the embodiment of, you look at how they worshiped those gods and what they did. And that, why do you think God said it was so detestable when Israel started getting involved with the gods of the nations around them? Remember, Israel started sacrificing their own children? I'm just so sad. You know, you always think that when God punishes that, oh, he's not a loving God. I mean, some Christians think that, right? They only think love, love, love. Let me tell you, you got to have a lot of love to see your people doing that in your face with children, destroying their own children to the sacrifice of Satan, your arch enemy, and you haven't rubbed them out. Matter of fact, they were going to be saved. They're going to see their Messiah. And we have, I'm going to say it, the audacity to say, well, God must be mean because he's punishing the Jews. They must not mean anything to him anymore. No, if they didn't mean anything to him anymore, he would have destroyed them. But he hasn't. He's judging them. He's punishing them. But they will be the head of the nations during the kingdom. And they will see their Messiah. That's love, wouldn't you say? Can you imagine having, as a husband, my wife, or as I don't know, a grandparent, having one of your children sacrifice their child to Satan, and they call themselves Christian? Would you be that easy to forgive them? Well, God does. So when we think about God and love, sometimes it's the other end of the spectrum of love that we don't like, which proves his love more than just his salvation and his love for us. Do you see what I'm saying? This is the answer that we have to be ready to give, because there are Christians who I talk to, and you probably talk to as well, who have no understanding of why God's so mean. That's why God allows sin, because it shows us at the end of the day we cannot argue, and the angels in heaven who are marveled at salvation, the ones that are still on God's side, right? They marvel it. They have no clue of really what this is, even though they're helping God work it out in us. They have no clue, but they do see one thing, the boundless love of God, which he wouldn't have to prove if there was no sin, right? That's the point of sin. That's the whole point of it. All right. So Zeus was the supreme cultural artifact and the embodiment of the Greek religious beliefs, and he was the model of great and fine and the ultimate deity. So Zeus was nothing to be toyed with. And if you look at Hades, he's a counterpart, isn't he? So in one instance, you see Jesus mentioning Hades as the god of the underworld, right? The dead and the underworld. And so there are gates in the underworld. And so now you understand what Jesus is talking about? That there is a whole society, that there is a whole governmental structure that is, its headquarters is where? In the underworld. That's their anti-heaven, if you will. It's going to be a permanent heaven for them when it's hell, when they transfer it into the lake of fire. But do you get what he's saying here? If you look at it again like a chess game, everything that God does is above on the white side. Everything that Satan does is exactly the same in type, but on the dark side. So God has a heaven? Well, guess where Satan's heaven is? Hades now. God is the god of all heaven and creation? Well, Zeus is the god of the underworld, his heaven, and also of all creation and the sky on the dark side. Do you see? You see how it works? It's very simple. Very simple. There's a man named Walter Burkett. He's a German scholar on Greek mythology and cult. He's actually in Europe. I think he's in Germany, but I think he's still taught in Europe. I think he taught in the Netherlands. But he has a book. It's called Greek Religion. Here's a quote from his book. Now, he's a scholar, by the way, so he knows this stuff. Even the gods who are not his, Zeus's natural children, address him, Zeus, as father. And all the gods rise in his presence. That's the power of Zeus. For the Greeks, he was the king of the gods who oversaw the universe, just like our God does on the white side of the chessboard. As, I'm going to try to say this right, John, if you know the name here, correct me. Pausanias. Sounds like Pausanias. We'll say Pausanias. Okay. Keep me honest here, because I'm terrible with these names. But doesn't matter. We don't worship him anyway. But that's why God has a simple name. God. I can even say Yahweh, Lord. But he's got a lot of names, but most of them are simple anyway. Okay. Pausanias observed that Zeus is king in heaven is a common saying to all men. Does it make the point? I don't have to keep making this point, do I? I want you to get it, though, because Jesus does talk about Zeus. Now, there's a gentleman named Hesiod. I don't remember. I didn't write down where he was, but he has a book or a writing called Theogonies Zeus. It's an older writing, and I didn't write down the reference to it. But anyway, but in this, it assigns the various gods their roles, and in the Homeric hymns, he is referred to as Zeus, as the chieftain of gods. I know that sounds a little confusing, but it's basically saying even in these older writings and hymns that don't directly chronicle things about Zeus and the religion, even in the songs and like the psalms of those people in those days, they still talked about Zeus as being the king of the universe. I hope I built up to this crescendo. Where does Jesus now talk about Zeus? You see, Jesus talked about Hades. Now you understand the command of Hades. You understand why Jesus wasn't talking about hell. You understand why he chose Hades. Do you remember when he said, Simon bar Jonah, son of Jonah, just before he talked about the gates of Hades? And because Jonah didn't just go into the bottom of the sea, God brought him to the depths of Hades to scare the pants off of him. And the fish brought him back up and spit him out. Do you understand that? What that means? It's not just folklore. It's not just a metaphor. That's why Jesus brings up Jonah's experience in context of talking about the gates of this place called Hades. Does that make sense? Okay. In Revelation, you can either turn there or you can listen because I want to make some headway here. But in Revelation chapter 2, remember that one of the first features of Revelation, first of all, it even says that those who read that book will be. But you may think, as a Christian, especially if you're a newer Christian, I've looked at that book. I ain't getting no blessings out of it. First of all, it looks like everybody gets decimated. And there's so much symbolism, and I don't understand it. By the way, if you're curious, I did a whole study on Revelation. It's in my notes. Go to the website on the home page on the left-hand side, click Revelation, click the notes. You can download the notes. I recorded some of that class from chapter 16 toward the end, so I don't have all the audio there, but it's all there. Anyway, but in the beginning, right after he says you'll be blessed, one of the first major features, he has John pen his letter to seven churches, right? Now, the major feature of the book of Revelation is this, the overarching feature. It is the only book in Scripture that is directly written by Jesus. By God himself. Do you understand the import of that? Here we have Jesus dictating to John. Is John doing any prophesying here? Is there a prophet telling someone to write something? Is there a prophet himself writing this book? No. It's Jesus himself saying, John, sit down, take a letter, Maria. Remember that song? Don't address it to my wife. That's not a nice song. But anyway, take a letter to Zeus. How's that? So he's giving...
Church is his bride, so.
Yeah, but you know what the letter's about. Yeah. Don't take a letter, Maria. Say, take a letter, tell him I'm coming back for him. Get ready. So basically, I mean, you are right. So the letters to the seven churches are what? Telling them the time is short. Get ready. Now, we know there were seven churches, but they're also, the letters to the seven churches can apply to every single human being who ever became a Christian. And some of us move from one of those type of churches to the other. Hopefully we all end up in the Philadelphia archetype, right? If we're going to be better. But I want to read you this one. This is the one we're in particularly talking about. Remember, in each letter, he says to each church, I commend you for this, but I also have this against you. Except there's one church where he doesn't commend them for anything. It was Laodicean. But we're talking about the church at Pergamum. In Revelation chapter 2 and verse 12, to the angel of the church in Pergamum write, these are the words. By the way, it's qualifying the letter to make sure that they know who the author is. Because when John gets off the Isle of Patmos, he's going to hand deliver these letters. And so, you know, it's got to have some kind of authenticity here, right? So it says here, these are the words of him who has the sharp, double-edged sword. So we know it's Jesus. He's the one. It's his word. He has the sword. And he goes right here and he says, I know where you live. Where does it say they live? Anybody looking this up? Where who?
Satan.
Whose throne? All right. So make sure you understand that. This is the context. We've set the context for this letter. I know where you live, where Satan has his throne. Yet you remain true to my name. You did not renounce your faith in me, even in the days of Antipas, my faithful witness, who, by the way, was horribly persecuted, who was put to death in your city. Read the rest. Where's Satan live? Do you see how clear this has to be? Now, Satan doesn't, does he have a house? Does he live in a house somewhere? He's a spirit being, right? But didn't God have a place of dwelling among Israel? In a certain city? On a certain Ark of the Covenant? It's a place where he chose to put his name. And by the way, his name is going to be chosen to put back there for eternity, isn't it? Well, Satan has a place that he chose to put his name to. You see, the white side of the chessboard, the dark side of the chessboard. Nothing new for Satan. But he does exactly the same things in the opposite way. And Jesus is now talking about this. He says, I know you live where Satan has his throne. It's like telling a Jew, I know you live where God has his throne. Well, you know where that is, don't you? It's Jerusalem. Okay, well, we're going to find out where Satan has his throne because that's what he's talking about. The church of Pergamum was in no doubt located in Pergamum. Guess what else was located in Pergamum? The throne of Zeus. The altar of Zeus was constructed by Eumenes. I'm going to say it like that. Eumenes, they had weird names. Eumenes II, king of Pergamum, and he reigned from 197 to 159 BC. This was raised, this throne of this altar, or rather the altar, as a memorial of Pergamum's victory over the Galatians under King Attalus I. Not all Galatians were Christian, by the way, but they did defeat the Galatians at some point. And this guy ruled from Pergamum from 269 to 197 before this other king took over. In Byzantine times, the temple was neglected and eventually dismantled, this temple of Zeus. But listen to this. Fragments of marble from the altar were built into the Byzantine defensive walls. They had a legacy here that they wanted to keep. They took the strength of Zeus, basically. Do you remember Saddam Hussein? What was he doing? The major thing he was trying to do. That's right. He fancied himself the modern day Nebuchadnezzar. And he was in the process of rebuilding Babylon. So there's this strength or persistence of memory, isn't there? In 1871, now we're rolling back to fairly modern times. In 1871, the Zeus altar was rediscovered by the German engineer Carl Heumann, who took it back to his home country. It is now exhibited at the Pergamum Museum in Berlin. You see the persistence of Satan's throne? The Turkish government is in the process of trying to get the artifact back from Germany. Why? Why is the Turkish government trying to get the artifact back from Germany? Because guess where Pergamum was located?
Turkey.
Good guess. I have a map in my notes. Actually, I have two maps. This first map will show you all of the seven churches that are talked about and that Jesus writes the letters to and where they're located, and the ancient mapping and the ancient names of those places. Pergamum, which is number three, is up here in this left corner where it's placed by the Aegean Sea. But if you look at a Google map today, the same place is called Bergama, Turkey. That's the modern day place. And if you look at tour guides and things, you will find that it references Pergamum being there in the ancient days. Why do you think Turkey wants it back? Because this is the God they worship. They want the artifact, just like the Jews want their temple back. Guess what the Satanists won, although they don't know they're Satanists or they're followers of Zeus in Hades. Do you see this? Didn't I say Jesus was going to mention Zeus? He did. He did. I think what we're going to do is, we got 5 minutes, we're going to continue along a little bit, going back now to 2 Samuel chapter 6 and verse 1. You may think I've made a lot of this today and last week. I hope you see that I didn't. Because we're going to move forward now, because there's this battle that's going to be even getting more pronounced between the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and the God of this world as we move forward in Scripture. And to give you a basis of understanding how Satan works, how he tried to thwart the line of Messiah, how he used DNA manipulation from the fallen angels, these watchers that came into women, and how that's happening again today, because as Jesus said, as in the days of Noah, so shall it be again in the days of the coming of the Son of Man, right? Do you see all of this happening? I assure you, we are further along this path than you may think we are. I have been doing the research. I know others who have done the research. And I'm telling you, watch for genetic manipulation that's going to hit mainstream within another year or two. You're going to see it. You're going to see it. You're seeing it now. You know all these wonderful things that we're doing with medical technology? They're starting to move into manipulating DNA. Yeah, they grew an ear on a rat.
And with big intestine matrix, they can like inject stem cells and grow lungs and things like human lungs. And
really?
Human organs. And
yeah. So isn't that mixing species that God said not to do? Why do you think, and actually you just brought up a good point, why do you think there was this big debate about stem cell research? Especially when you can get adult stem cells, you don't need to kill babies for them. But it's combining the sacrifice of these gods in the way of abortion and also extending human life for those who will rule the world through DNA technology. DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project A. Agency. It's an agency. It's a government agency. It's a big black box agency. They do all of the research here. No one is even allowed to audit this agency. They have a website. They'll tell you the wonderful things they're doing in technology. But I'm telling you, there's documented things back when people tried to look into this, what they said they were doing. And there was instances where officials in DARPA were back in the early 2000s, were interviewed, and they were told, do not ask certain questions, because there are answers to them. Be very careful. Monstrosities are here. All right. Well, it's almost 9:35 or 10:35 rather. So I think we're probably done. But next week we're going to start in 2 Samuel chapter 6, where David brings the Ark of the Covenant back. Remember, one of the things we know now is that David says, after all of his prosperity and defeating all of these enemies and taking these idols, what else is there now? Oh yeah, that's right, there's the Ark of the Covenant. We're going to talk about that, because now this begins the real meat of David's relationship with God. Which a lot of people think were his sinning and that stuff, and God, you know, saying he's, you know, I favor him and he's my friend and all that. Yeah, that's true. But here the key is the Davidic covenant. And we're going to start in chapter 6, and then chapter 7 we're going to really get into in depth, because that is the detail. And I'll just give you this, a lovely thing. It's a lovely thing where David says, I have been prospered. I have this beautiful home made of the finest cedar and all of these things. And he says to God, I want to build a home for you. And God says, no, David, I'm going to build a house for you. And then we know the rest of the story, where David starts gathering the materials for the temple, but is not allowed to build it because he's a bloody man. But the fact that God actually condescends to David and says, I am going to build a house for you. And you see how David just is floored by that, and he's honored by it. That's the beginning of a covenant. That if is the reason for the first of the four Gospels. The lineage of the book of Matthew starts from David. Because one of the first four requirements of Messiah is he must be king of the, from the line of
David.
Who will take the throne of David again when he comes back. So that's next week. Have a great week, everybody.